Welcome to Inside Analog Photo. I'm your host, Scott Shepard. The Inside Analog Photo radio program is all about the traditional photographic process. We talk about all aspects of analog photography, including the hybrid workflow. You can find out more information over at www.insideanalogphoto.com. And of course, Inside Analog Photo is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. These guys have the coolest instant photography materials known to mankind. They have, of course, the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4x5, color and black and white. They have the Instax systems in the wide format, the Instax 210 camera and film, and of course the Instax Mini in the Instax Mini 7 and the Instax Mini 25, both in color film. Beautiful stuff. There's nothing cooler than instant photography. You get a print, because if you don't have a print, you don't have a real photograph. This is great fun stuff. This is great for art. This is great for business. This is cool stuff. You definitely want to check them out over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends over at Photo Publicist, providing worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development for the photographer, turning photographers into celebrities. You can find out more information over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the highest quality work known to mankind anywhere on this planet. Unbelievable developing, scanning, and of course, output on high quality Fuji Crystal Archive. Unbelievable cool stuff these guys are up to. And remember, you don't have a photograph unless you have a print in your hand, and you need to print your pictures. This is important. You need to supply proofs to your customers and even print your own work, because it's not about looking at it on a monitor. It's about holding a print in your hand. Definitely check these guys out at Richard Photo Lab, of course, at richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5. DR5 Chrome Black and White Developing, that turns your black and white neg into, that's right, black and white chrome. Unbelievable stuff. www.dr5.com. Our friends over at Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com for the camera strap that will not slip off your shoulder, guaranteed bar none, the coolest strap around. Our friends at Iger Studios for the finest quality drum scans known to mankind, igerstudios.com. Our official media partner, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, for all things traditional photographic process on the web, www.apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.eastmanhouse.org. Today on Inside Analog Photo, we're going to be here with Scott DiSabato. Scott is the sales manager and the imaging specialty and pro film marketing manager for Eastman Kodak. We're going to talk today about a brand new film, the new Portra 160. We're going to chat about how things have been going with the Portra 400, black and white, and a lot of other stuff going on with Kodak. Scott, how you doing today?
It is going marvelous.
It really is going marvelous for everybody at Kodak, and I do appreciate you joining us today to talk about this brand new emulsion. You guys have more new film. Outlook at Kodak is bright and happy, and there's a lot of people that are quite enthusiastically happy about Kodak.
Yeah, there has been a tremendous amount of interest in film. It's been exciting over the past couple of months, where we launched the new Portra 400 film, and to kind of hear that film move into the marketplace and people test it and talk about it and provide feedback has been just amazing. I think we've really got a successful film with the new Portra 400 for sure. And kind of following behind that success, we are announcing a very similar move on the 160 speed platform with the Portra films. So currently we make the Portra 160 natural color and the vivid color. What we're doing with the introduction of the new Portra 160 is we're taking the qualities of the Portra 160 natural color film and, to a lesser degree, the Portra 160 vivid color, and combining them. And we've made a pretty substantial improvement in the grain. And this becomes more important based on the great results we got out of the Portra 400 film. It was beginning to sort of compete with the image structure we were able to get with the 160 film. So the movement to improve the grain even more kind of keeps that spacing that we like between the different speeds there. So we've incorporated Kodak's advanced cubic emulsions. And those are just traditional cubical silver halide that are very fine grain, and we can incorporate them into some of our slower speed films. Ektar, for instance, has cubical silver halide in it. The other benefit besides the image structure is it scatters the light less than the T-grain does, so that provides a more crisp-looking image, which is very helpful. So the great news, too, is that this film incorporates the Kodak Vision film technology, and we have the antenna dye in the magenta dye layer, which is great for a slower speed film like this. Net result is just a nice bump improvement in the grain structure on this film. And just to talk a little bit about where this falls between the natural color and vivid color, the natural color emulsion has a very just gentle, moderate contrast. And that makes a whole lot of sense as you go into kind of a hybrid or scanning environment that you've got your highlight and shadow values real close to one another to get all that rich information. So that's where we settled on the contrast with this product. The Portra 160 NC is actually the most popular film in our Portra family. So based on that popularity and its just fabulous skin tones with the film, we have gone ahead and aligned the color palette pretty much right on where the NC film was. Now, what we've noticed with the Portra 160 Vivid Color over the past 2 years since Ektar has been around, that film has been declining at a rate faster than the general color negative category has been. And that's the result of people that were looking for color settled on the 160 VC position. But in fact, with the Ektar there, with a better image structure, bolder color, a different palette for sure, but just kind of more intensity there. I believe a lot of people were opting for that. So it's kind of a natural progression that is occurring here with a great film like Ektar on one end and the popularity and just fantastic skin tones that the 160 natural color provides. And as I look at the 400 launch that we had, that has been accepted very nicely by both the NC and VC shooters. And I think we're maybe in a better position here because we do also have the Ektar at a slow speed.
So if I have Ektar, why would I want to shoot the new Portra 160? Or if I have the new Portra 160, why would I want Ektar? So are we just talking about a color palette difference? Are we talking better technology in one or the other? What's the differentiating factor between A and B?
Well, there's definitely a bigger wedge between these two films than what we had, I guess, with all three being offered there. So the Portra 160 natural color position and where the 160 falls now is just amazing for skin tones. It's really what it does the best. And it's not just the color palette. It is also things like sharpness. I think a couple generations ago with our color negative platform, we discovered that it can easily get too sharp. I think for portraiture, a little bit of softness. I don't even want to call it softness because it is a very sharp film. But when I speak of it next to Ektar, there's definitely a difference there. But you don't want to resolve all the detail when you're doing a portrait of a beautiful 62-year-old lady or something. So there is just the right amount, I think, to render the skin tone in a smooth way. The image structure in the Ektar is the finest grain color film made. So it is made to resolve everything. And the grain structure on that is also phenomenal. So from an image structure standpoint, Ektar certainly has the edge in terms of enlargement. But for portraiture, where amazing detail sometimes can be detrimental to an image, the Portra product now with finer grain will do that very, very well. So I hope that part's clear. Of course, from a color palette, the natural color position that we defaulted on. And by the way, I do want to bring up the fact that with the change that we made to the 160 NC and VC in 2006, we brought those two films to within 5% of one another in terms of the difference in saturation. So there was not a very big difference in even the previous generation of NC versus VC films. So just bringing that sort of to one position was not as dramatic of a move as it would have been, say, in the optical days in the 90s when the Portra films first came out. So the Portra 160, from a color position, it has accurate color, but I think the world today is used to hyped up color. That, in some cases, is the norm. So I've heard a lot of people describe the Portra 160 as kind of romantic and muted color, and it would appear that way, but it is pretty accurate in terms of the hue and intensity. It's just we're very used to, from looking at plasma screens and images that are kind of tuned up a little bit, to really feel that the average is actually heightened saturation.
Tuned up? You mean we're used to incorrect color, oversaturated, oversharpened digital images?
Hey, that's a possibility with those controls at your fingertip. You mess with it too long, there it is. And I think that that's probably the case. But in that league, for sure, the Ektar film really is quite a saturated film. It puts a lot of dye down, but does so with moderate contrast. So again, all that detail is available to all sorts of scanners out there, whether they're flatbed, dedicated film scanners, or drum scans. So again, it depends what you're looking for. I've seen phenomenal portraits done with Ektar, and I've seen amazing landscapes done with the Portra 160. So they're tools, but to just break it down, you've got the image structure edge with the Ektar. You've got the color saturation in exaggerated form with Ektar, and you've got more of an accurate rendition with the Portra 160. And as I discussed, not as sharp, but that can be a great benefit to someone working in portraiture or even weddings.
No, the emulsion's beautiful. I mean, it renders colors just the way you want them. And if you do need to crank those up, it's very easy to do in post. It takes 20 seconds, so it'll go anywhere you need. But I think, like you said, it's really tailored for taking pictures of people. It's portrait film.
Yeah, and I think in a lot of ways, if you're in a hybrid environment scanning the film, less is definitely more. You have the controls to override, but I think the beauty of working with a film like the Portra family is that labs have gotten very, very good at working with these films. They know how to scan them, and many, many times you can just expose this film, get it to the lab, and work directly with the prints. But if you are taking the scans, there's very little post-production work that is generally necessary once you and the lab kind of get dialed into one another. So that's an exciting benefit, I think, of working with a modern color negative film like the Portra family.
Let's talk about the exposure latitude on the new Portra 160 in comparison to maybe the exposure latitude of the Portra 400. I know the 400 has 3 over, 2 under, and you can definitely do more than that. So really, I think in the world of analog technology right now that the Portra 400, it's from Area 51, man. It's amazing. So really, are we going to see the same type of latitude with the 160, or how's that work? Because it's color film and things are different.
Yeah. Well, Scott, I want to correct you. It's not from Area 51. It's from Building 38. They're second cousins or something.
Another one of those secret government installations that people really don't know about, except one's in Rochester and, well, can't talk about the Grays, yeah.
Yeah, maybe at one time. So, yeah, a great facility, modern as all heck. As we've talked about before, making an emulsion is like working in the kitchen, and more consistent and repeatable you can make it by actually reducing the amount of human intervention, the better, more consistent film you can make. And that's where all of Kodak professional film is made. So back to the question about latitude. On paper, we're saying that the 160 can deal with 3 over and 2 under, but I think you point out something pretty fascinating. I think the Portra 400 with the T-grain in that particular emulsion is just phenomenal. The elasticity shown by that film in terms of over and under exposure is like nothing I've ever seen. So I think, yeah, potentially that is a stronger film than maybe what we state. But I'll go ahead with the 3 over, 2 under on the 160. And I think in most cases, the efficiency of the T-grain, the tabular grain in the higher speed films is probably a big reason that we're getting successful results in a film that is either having a lot of light poured onto it or not enough. I think that's a big reason. So this emulsion has T-grain in it, but it also has the advanced cubes, which maybe does not keep up at the same rate as some of the T-grain. I don't know exactly why that is, but I wouldn't call this film a slouch at all. I mean, it has wonderful over-under exposure latitude, but as you point out, 400 has just shown an exceptional ability to be tortured.
No, really, I mean, there's got to be technology shared between these different areas of Area 51 and Building 38, because the 400 film, it defies reality. You would never think you could do that with a piece of film. Whatever they use from the Vision 3, from the motion picture guys, I don't know if it was a bleed over from Spielberg, but you know something, the stuff is really incredible. And one thing that I do want to address, that people have publicly stated online, that when you shoot the Portra 400, that it goes yellow when it's overexposed. And we've found that to be completely wrong. Incorrect. It's just a bad managed workflow that people are using, because we've never seen this stuff go yellow ever. It's just something I want to say, because I keep hearing this, oh, yellow, yellow. Well, it's not. It's flat. It's linear. Like I said, the stuff is beyond belief.
Well, that's good to know. And I do respect everybody. Every photographer, every lab has a slightly different workflow, and that's going to subject any results to variability. Even the lens, right? Many times can have a hue that's going to show itself on film potentially. But that's the beauty of dealing with either an optical workflow or a scanning workflow, right? You can make those basic overall corrections, and what's important is you don't have any sort of crossover occur, or not one to a great extent. Crossover being like pink highlights and green shadows, those tend to be difficult to remove versus a general overall cast. But a well-color-managed lab or workflow that a photographer has should be able to deal with any small variations. But yeah, I've heard many, many times, especially with the portrait films, that people basically just import them and just might resize it or just do something subtle, and they're good to go, and that's proven to be a real benefit in the film workflow.
I just can't say enough about it, man. I don't know what to say. And it's almost the one film. It's it. I think really it gets to a point now that the new Ektar is fabulous. Other manufacturers' film is fabulous. But really, with the new Portra 400, it's like buy a freezer full because that's all you need. It's worth it. And I'm sure if you buy half container loads, you get a deal from Kodak direct. So
yeah, you get a free light meter. You don't have to stock it up in the freezer. We'll make it fresh, and that's certainly the best way. But you're right, man. We're left with this just amazing portfolio right now. You could argue years ago we maybe had more films, but I would challenge anyone to say that we're covering the range that we have now with the new Portra 160 and the Portra 400. We have the Portra 800, and it's available in 120 and 35, and it's a fantastic film with a greater light sensitivity over the 400. And then the Ektar, which is doing its kind of unique thing out there with great image structure and good color intensity as well. So it really has things covered.
It is. I mean, with the 400, you can shoot it at 16 with standard dev, and it looks fab. And you can shoot it at 64 with a plus 2. I mean, it's one film. You can go from 25 to 6400 with one box. And I haven't even seen anybody that's pushed it more than that. I bet you could shoot it at 12,000.
Well, again, photographers have shown me work that is blowing my mind, too. So every chance I can see something beyond the so-called range of the film, it just increases my confidence with it as well. So good stuff. And now the 160 joins the fold. A big improvement in grain, and that will translate directly into improved scanning and an improved file that you end up with there.
So why don't you take the Portra 400 and remove the orange mask and just call it digital film?
Someone's going to ask, why is the orange even there? But sometimes there are so many systems that are just set up to deal with the orange mask. Originally, it was to minimize the amount of kind of cyan filtration that was used in opticals. But it's a standard. It works. But we'll have to look at all that. Again, I think it's the norm, and it's what people are expecting out there. And we'll leave it in. And there's still certainly people printing optically. And there's a great look to optical prints that can be slightly different than maybe what you see in a digital workflow.
Oh, definitely.
And it's not much of the film that we sell anymore that goes through that. So we want to retain that. We don't want to lose that heritage and great print quality that we get from optical printing.
What type of feedback have you seen from the 400 and now we have the 160 where we have this consolidated VCNC thing going on? Did you get a lot of feedback or flack from the 400 being NC VC and now people see it and they're like, wow, this is great? What do you see? What do you hear on the street?
Well, so far, nothing from the 400, and we went out of our way to sort of test that. We sent the product out to some NC users as well as VC users, and we really just asked them to pay attention to the grain and not really talk about the compromise in the color saturation level. And what we got back was great compliments on the grain and great compliments on the color or the skin tone or whatever it was that they were pointing out to us. So that's worked out very, very well. And I think, as I said, the Portra 160 film will just start to ship beginning in March. So we don't really have a public reaction, but everybody that tested it produced fantastic work with it. And I've seen some real strong color with it, fabulous skin tone across the board, great what we call flesh to neutral balance with the film as well. So I think it looks like it's going to be received very much the same way. Because remember, they were only 5% or less apart from one another from a saturation standpoint, which is not that much. And at the 400 speed range, we didn't have an Ektar sitting out there for those that were interested in a bit more.
Have you found that the new 400 speed film is being gobbled up so quick that you guys can't keep up with it? Do you find that it's being so well received that people are just buying this stuff up like it's the best thing since sliced bread?
Well, sales are strong, and so far this year, I don't think I've heard of or encountered any supply issues with it yet. So, no, I don't know that we've run out, to my knowledge, but we're not really in a photo active, busy part of the year either. So So we'll be gearing up for it. We had a real strong year last year, and we're looking forward to another outstanding year this year.
What type of, I don't know, feedback or comments you've had about the availability of the product in 220s? Seems that there is wedding and portrait, and even some people that shoot other genres of photography seem to like 220. And 220 really is a U.S. product because it was really never adopted widely worldwide, but it seemed in the U.S. that people really dig 220.
Yeah, I think if you use 220, you're in love with 220. It really allows you to keep working, to keep focused, and I'm just real proud that both of these films are available in 220. So the reaction from the 220 format shooters has been very, very strong. And in fact, I think it probably has gained some business from the competition as they back out of the 220 format. So I think it's been great that these two films are still here for those that are loyal to the format. You talk to a lot of wedding photographers that really would have a difficult time with 120 just based on the amount of film changes they'd have to go through. And fashion photographers, and really just anybody that has a 220 back and has kind of learned to keep working like that. And then, of course, if you're at a 6.45 or 6x6 and you're into some of the larger medium format sizes, 6x7 or 6x9, you chew through that pretty quickly.
Yeah, I've never thought about putting 220 in our 6x9 cameras. So another good tip there to increase 6 shots to 12. So always fun.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Scott, with all this great, great news and ink and happy photographers going on with what's happening at Kodak with the portrait line and the color films, and there's a lot of new stuff at Kodak, let's talk about the state of black and white. I know that there's been some consolidation in some 8x10 large format product, and I think that's still going strong, but there were some changes in the way it was distributed. Let's sort of get an overview here of the black and white scenario. What's going on with all that?
Black and white has been a really strong performing part of the portfolio. And in the last couple of years, it has emerged as the largest part of the Kodak professional portfolio. So it's the largest film type that we now sell, which is great. And it makes a lot of sense that black and white really is quite special, and digital doesn't even come close to trying to replicate the tonality and the nuances and the grain structure in the image tonality itself, as opposed to being added on top of density values. So it's very tangible. People can go in the dark room and work with it. And I think as an art form, it just lends itself very nicely to black and white images, to film. They just go together. So to answer your question, yeah, while we're always looking at ways to become more efficient, and it's important for the entire portfolio that we continue to do that, the more efficient we remain, the longer we can offer the great range of products that we have. But when there is some inefficiency, sometimes we need to just change the way that we go about doing things. And I think the 8x10 announcement that we made at the end of the year is really one of those. We may have talked in the past about the fact that a dealer that orders product and it goes out of date and they end up losing money on it, or God forbid, throwing it out, then they will not order that product again unless they've got someone who will put money down for a case of that. And that's what I think we have been finding, is that as a stocked item, the 8x10 doesn't make as much sense as it used to. And that's because the volume and frequency has gone down over the years. That's fine. Our commitment to the film, though, is still there. We're just trying to figure out better ways to connect passionate 8x10 users with someone that is going to order that product. And it's not necessarily sitting on a dusty shelf in a town somewhere that used to have an 8x10 photographer that no longer is shooting that format or something. So we've sort of run into those issues. So what we have done over the past year is we started working with a camera manufacturer, Canem Cameras, and he has expressed interest in trying to consolidate on a worldwide level a demand of a product which Kodak no longer stocks but would like to make. And we've had these special order programs for years and years. It's just hard for individual dealers and photographers to meet those minimums that we have. Kodak is set up for maximum efficiency. We sort of touched on that before and how important that is. When we have to sort of change the efficiency of our manufacturing flow by doing one-offs or special order items, we need to make it worth our while to interrupt the desire to be efficient. So we asked for a pretty hefty minimum of $15,000 worth of product to make that happen. So what Canon Cameras is doing is collecting orders for sizes that we no longer stock or maybe never stock. I mean, they're trying to collect enough for formats such as 20 by 24 or 7 by 17, other ultra large format sizes. So he already has enough to get the T-Max 400 8x10 order in our system. So we're already there. So dealers out there, you can buy from Canon Cameras to meet the needs of your customers. And I think there could be a different price scale if you're a photographer and wanted to buy directly from Canon Cameras. But I'd encourage you to go to the website there. And I believe it's Canon Cameras, one word. C-A-N-H-A-M, and there's an order form there, and you'll see that he has different orders that he's collecting. So it's a change, but as long as we continue to make the emulsion and base combination, and we're able to get a 15,000 order together, Kodak will make virtually any product out there. That's kind of where we stand. So just a month, month and a half after the discontinuance, we already have an order for the T-Max 400 in 8x10. So I want to thank everybody out there that kind of rallied together to place that order. But we may have to do more creative things like that in the future when the demand for stocking these materials is no longer reasonable, but we can still do special orders on a less frequent basis. And that tends to be better for Kodak to make sure that all the product we make is sold before expiration. And same thing for dealers. They're really only buying it in this way if they have users for it. So disappointing, maybe if you're an 8x10 photographer that was able to get the T-Max film by just walking in to one of the few dealers that was actually stocking it. But great news, I think, that we're still continuing to make this product and it just has to be consolidated a little bit better.
Well, really, I mean, who expects people to stock this kind of product on the shelf? I mean, large format photography is beautiful. There's nothing that compares to it. But when it gets to a certain point, all this kind of product is going to sit on the shelf and rot. So why would you want to go into a produce market and buy rotten fruit when you can have fresh?
It'll certainly be fresh when it gets into the photographer's hands. It'll just have been finished and sent out. So that's definitely true. But it's definitely something that I think once photographers that are committed to a certain emulsion and committed to certain formats, they begin to understand how that works. It'll be a change. I think you'll have to look ahead a little more and place orders for product that you need right away and expect to need over the next few months or until a next order can be produced. But yeah, it's a bit of a change. But again, I'm just glad that the emulsions that people like and formats that they need are available.
How's the outlook for black and white in general? Do you still find that it's extremely strong in education markets and so forth and so on? Or are you seeing a shift more towards color?
No, I think black and white is strong across the board. Photographers, there's a lot of switch hitters out there, a lot of them, but there are many, many photographers that see creatively, visually in black and white only. And when that's the case, I think that the analog materials really shine and show through. So black and white pops up everywhere. It pops up in the education market for sure, for fine art for sure. In the portrait wedding and commercial markets, it's there. And so the outlook is really strong. And there's just something about the self-reliance of black and white, too, that's quite appealing. Maybe quite the opposite of something like E6 or certainly K14, where you pretty much typically rely on a lab. But for black and white, obviously, you're able to do that yourself. And in fact, you might have more creative control, more technical control, for sure, if you do that. And you're a good darkroom technician, too. So that's the beauty of black and white, is it's part of a workflow process and you can participate in just a part of it by exposing film, or you can participate in the entire workflow from exposing it to developing it and, of course, making your own prints.
Well, I mean, really, too, I think every photographer, if you're shooting analog product, at some point you need to soup some black and white in the bathroom because it is so easy to do. And it's extremely rewarding, and it's a tactile experience. And I think that if you know more about the process that you're using and shooting, you're going to be better all the way around. So everybody should try to at least soup some black and white. I mean, you can do this with washing soda and instant coffee if you want.
Yeah, and we've got a broad range of developers out there, and some are pretty flexible in terms of their mixing and keeping. So yeah, for sure, it's quite an experience, and you've got creative and technical controls that are just extraordinary.
So it's great to see that things are still strong in all markets. So it must be a fabulous time right now at Kodak to be in the film group.
Well, yeah, and there's a lot of us that work in the film area are pretty passionate about what we make and what we do, and we help people. Yeah, it is a great time because we have, despite the uphill battle occasionally, we are in control of a wonderful portfolio of films. And we've really never made film that has been at the quality that we're making today. And we'll keep going with it. We certainly need the customers to continue to buy it. And that's a strong relationship. We'll keep making it then. So it is a great time to hear people going back to film, to hear about people that have maybe come from a digital background and they try film along the way and fall in love with it. I think film's a great way to differentiate your work in this digital world. So it's a great time because I think people are considering what film means to them more than they would have before. When film was really the only way to make certain kind of images, you just had to do it that way. And you didn't necessarily stop to ponder or consider the film quite like you might today as you enjoy the differences, and they just stand out. So fun time, great films, and really some great photographers out there using our stuff and just making incredible images with it.
It is pretty cool. So let's touch off on one thing that we haven't really chatted about a lot previously is the whole paper environment. I know as part of your duties at Kodak, you're in the whole film group, and that includes paper. There's, I think, some interesting products right now for people that do want to print. A lot of people don't print anymore like they should, and you really don't have a photograph until you have a print. So what's sort of the state of paper at Kodak?
Well, yeah, paper is a critical part of our traditional business. And I think if we look historically at some of the changes that have taken place, as film levels declined, we were seeing color paper decline at a rate as well. And that was primarily due to the amount of proofing that was done. That generated quite a bit of paper, both in the professional side and the consumer side. But some years ago, that leveled off somewhat as digital substitution sort of ran its course, and especially the portrait and wedding communities began to level off some, because the final images were still printed out and that represented a certain amount of business. But what also happened is the number of clicks, the number of images made went way up as well. So at some point, just the mass of digital images began to then get printed out onto photographic paper. Again, typically in a situation where they're using LEDs or lasers to write onto color paper. So it's been a somewhat stable business for us. And I think if you're looking for high quality images and good value, I think photographic paper is absolutely one of the best places to look. So the papers were all designed, just like we were talking about with the portrait films, to work in the optical workflow. And then the digital capabilities started to enter into our color papers, the Endura line of paper. And, of course, the reciprocity characteristics of those products are different than the optical workflow. But I've got to say that the photographic system in the optical days just worked. It was just fantastic, the quality we were able to produce with optical printing. But that still really holds true today. I mean, a lot of the aims that we had before, except for things like reciprocity, are pretty much the same. So the relative color space that film has complements very well, for example, our Kodak Professional Endura Super VC paper today. So the way those colors complement each other and really stimulate each other, rather than through maybe an optical light path, it's digitized and then sort of turned into the signal that exposes the new Super VC paper. It's really the relative spacing and gamut of the color palette of the film and the paper that still really works. So I still think that it really makes sense for a Kodak film shooter to try a variety of different outputs. See what you like, whether it's inkjet or other materials, but I think you'll find that the Super VC paper really does sort of carry the capabilities of your film just that much further.
Scott, what's the best place to find a lab that's currently using Kodak materials? So if you do want to try out the Super VC paper, the metallic, some of the other options that are available from the different finishes, where would someone look to actually find out and say, hey, I'd like to see what my stuff looks like?
Yeah, and that's very important that we're able to match up a photographer's needs with a lab's capabilities. So on our Kodak website, if you were to search for our ProLab locator, you'll see that you'll get to a page that will allow you to put in your city and state and put in different lab offerings. And whether you want C41 processing, whether you would like to look at our color metallic paper, whatever it is. You can type that in and it will show you the labs that are closest to you that offer those services. So pretty good way to sort of connect lab's capabilities with photographers' needs out there. So it's a ProLab locator.
Scott, also give us the information on where we go to find out about, of course, the Portra 400 and the brand new Portra 160. Where do we find out about these emulsions, the films? There's tech data sheets. There's examples. Where's this at?
Yeah, if you go to our website, kodak.com/go/professional, from there you can navigate all around really everything that we've talked about today, from color to chemistry to, of course, the new films that we have. So it's all there, and almost everything we make has a technical data sheet that you can download and get some real good, valuable information there.
And also, Scott, the next place where they can actually go see you guys physically in person is going to be the Society of Photographic Educators Conference that's going to be coming up in Atlanta, correct?
Yep, Kodak will be there. We'll have a booth. It is Friday, March 11th. I think we'll be down in Atlanta.
Beautiful. What a great place at a great time of the year. Always nice to go visit Atlanta.
Especially when you're in Rochester.
Yeah, I bet it's cold right now and there's a lot of snow.
It's cold. Let me look. It's pretty warm today. We're up to 22 degrees after being -9 this morning. So that sun really works. Post some film with it.
There you go. Well, Scott, I really appreciate you joining today. Thanks for the update on what's up with the color neg line with Kodak, black and white and film and paper and all this kind of great stuff. And we always appreciate you joining us on the program to talk to everybody about what you guys are up to. So again, I appreciate it and thanks so much.
Great, Scott. And thank you very much, too. Appreciate it.
Well, there you go. The word from the man, Eastman Kodak, Scott DeSabato. Pretty cool stuff going on with them. Brand new films, updates of films. You know, they keep cranking out stuff. It looks fabulous future for analog photography. And we'd like to thank Scott for joining us today to talk about Eastman Kodak's involvement in analog photography, their pro film division, and all the stuff that's going on, of course, with Kodak. The Inside Analog Photo Radio Program has been brought to you by Fujifilm for their full line of instant cameras and film and, of course, fine-quality Fuji Crystal Archive paper over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. Our friends at Photo Publicist, worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the finest quality lab in the country, richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5 for black and white chrome at dr5.com. Upstrap for the finest quality camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder at upstrap-pro.com. Our friends over at Iger Studios at igerstudios.com. And of course, our media partners of the Analog Photography User Group at apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House, over at eastmanhouse.org. I've been your host, Scott Shippard, here on Inside Analog Photo. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.